Skull and Everett present This Week in Horror.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Everett.
And I'm Sickle, and we're Sickle and Everett. We're the Unhallowed Reviewers. I think we missed last week, didn't we?
Don't worry about it. Don't think about it.
It happens. Try not to. Just letting down all of our adoring fans.
No, we're letting them down.
Yeah.
All right, so we're back again. We have some kind of special stuff we talked about last time at the end of the episode. We're going to talk about trilogies today. But before we get into that, we're going to talk about some other things. So this will be a little bit longer of an episode. We're going to talk about news and This Week in Horror, and then we're going to jump into trilogies as a subtopic. So let's just start off with the trailers we've seen this week that we thought were cool.
Yeah, the first one we had up was The Wretched.
You kind of blindsided me with this one because I didn't know what this was, and I watched it and I was like, well, there's another movie I want to see.
Yeah, it kind of like came out of nowhere for me too. It's kind of like about what was the comparison? Rear Window? Isn't that the name of that movie?
Mm-hmm. You mean the one whatever. With like the Alfred Hitchcock movie?
Yeah, it's
oh,
where
I
like
guess
the
I
guys
can see that. Yeah,
yeah, like a little bit of voyeurism.
Suburbia.
Suburbia with
Shia LaBeouf. Ramshing a nice, it's Shia LaBeouf.
But like with a like skinwalking witch, seemingly situation going on.
Yeah, that was kind of confusing to me at first because there was like the corpse of the deer, and then something crawls out of it, and I'm like, what the heck is this? And then there's a picture, like a very, very badly drawn picture of a witch, and I'm like, oh, that was supposed to be a witch. Okay, I can buy it.
Yeah, I can roll with any like new variation on a witch.
Yeah,
anything that doesn't involve a cauldron, I'm good.
As long as it's not the Vivievich, right?
The Vivievich. Thanks.
But that movie looks cool, except for it said coming soon, and that always pisses me off because I'm like, well, I want to know when. So,
yeah.
Don't show me a trailer unless you tell me when it's going to be released.
Yeah, that's the I called it the equilibrium paradox because then you like lose
that.
Track of it. You lose track of it for like 10 years and then it like magically reappears.
Yeah. Similarly close in kind of general theme, maybe not with witches, but is the Antlers trailer. This Antlers looks a little bit less, I mean I'm trying to figure out the best way. So the oh my gosh, what was that movie just called? The Wretched was definitely like a kind of supernatural horror. Like, they didn't joke about it at all, right? It was like, you saw the thing crawling out, and that was that, right?
I think
Antlers is gonna be a supernatural horror, but the trailer, you're not really super sure. But
you can't really tell what's happening.
Yeah.
Completely.
And
which is a good thing.
Yeah, and so, my history with, based off of, like, the Antlers title, and what they talk about in the movie, and what they show, makes me feel like it's a new take on Wendigo, perhaps, which would be pretty fun, because I love Wendigo movies, because there's so many different ways to do them, and, like, the Wendigo creature itself is such a cool, like, theme and story, and the visuals of Wendigos are always really cool to see interpreted. I mean, you go, like, look at video games, like, Until Dawn, that is, has some Wendigo references and things like that in it. Spoilers, I guess, if you haven't played Until Dawn, but it's really cool. You should go play Until Dawn, because it's terrifying, but... it seemed very Wendigo-y to me.
Yeah, and it's got, like, you know, a couple of visuals shots that make it seem like, at the very least, it shouldn't let us down like It Comes at Night did. There are parts of it that kind of give me that kind of a vibe.
There's unless they shot the trailer and then reshoot the entire movie, I don't think it could disappoint me that much.
No, yeah, I agree. But, yeah, super stoked for it. It's hard to tell if something produced by Guillermo del Toro is necessarily 100% promising. I love the guy.
Darkness.
Yeah, Don't Be Afraid. Yeah, and it's like it's hard to like base it off of production alone. Like directing, absolutely, but producing, we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. So it's the same thing with James Wan. Like sometimes producing movies, and you're like, well, I definitely thought it was directed by him and not produced by him. So. The last one, I think the trailer that we saw that we really thought was cool was called Underwater, which kind of came out of nowhere, and it has Kristen Stewart in it, and her look is completely different than any other movie she's been in before, I think.
She's kind of doing a Ripley from
and she's
Alien 3.
She's been doing a lot of horror now because she's in that cabin movie or whatever, the cabin or the one where the kids get snowed in with her, and she was like in a cult, and you're kind of convinced at the end of the trailer the cult is coming back to kill her or something. Have you seen that trailer?
I have not seen that one.
Okay, let me find it. Talk about Underwater, and I'll find that trailer while we're talking. All
right. Underwater is kind of... It kind of... The premise of it kind of reminds me of an old-school B-movie called Deep Star 6, which is about, like, this oceanic, you know, institute vessel facility way underground, or way underwater at the bottom of the ocean, and a creature comes out and... like, starts to destroy the ship. It's got, like, one good scene in it, so you don't have to watch it. But the, this one is kind of the same idea. It's, like, this underwater facility at the bottom of the ocean, and, like, something gets, you know, broken out from the bottom of the ocean when they go down there. I think it looks awesome. I'm a little hesitant on what the creature route appears to be.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like it's more like almost some kind of like Atlantean thing where there's like an underwater people that like almost like The Descent but like underwater. And I kind of was hoping more for like a Deep Rising kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm thinking like it's kind of, I'm hoping it kind of is more like Lovecraftian. In terms of, it's just some horrible thing that's making them go insane. I could get with that. You know, I could get behind.
Yeah.
Like, because I don't want it to be The Sphere. And I've never, I mean, this is heresy, but I've never seen The Abyss. And so, like, I don't really know exactly what to expect if it's going to be like that. So I'm kind of in the spot right now of, like, hey, it could be pretty interesting, you know? Like, it's hard to go wrong with the kind of theme they're going for, because a lot of movies have done it well that I've seen, you know?
Yeah.
But...
Well, with Abyss, yeah. From a horror standpoint, you're not missing out on anything. It's really... that's just the depth of the water. That's the monster in that. It's not the aliens.
Yeah. So the movie I was thinking about was called The Lodge, and it's not Kristen Stewart. It's, there's no way that's Alicia Silverstone. No, it's not her. Okay, I was like, what the heck? I'm trying to think. I guess I'm like a little bit sexist because a lot of people look the same. It's a girl named Riley Keough. She was in Mad Max Beyond or Fury Road, and It Comes at Night. She played.
Oh yes.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, I think I know who you're talking about. She's one of the captive.
Yeah.
Brides that get away. Okay. Yeah.
So. But yeah, sorry. So not Kristen Stewart, but it just shows you how generic she looks like. No, but it looks. I think it looks kind of cool. Like I'm willing to see a movie like that again because it's been so long since they've had one. You know, they've been doing the like space thing for so long with like Ad Astra and Life and all this stuff. Like I'm ready for them to take it to the bottom of the ocean again, I guess, because it's just as terrifying, if not more so.
Cause, like, and more realistic that those that something like that would be down there.
Yeah. Right. Like. Yeah. Exactly. So. So let's talk about some movies. I think we both saw Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, right?
We did.
So let's do that, and we'll save Ready or Not till next time, since you haven't seen it yet, because you're going to see it.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I'm actually seeing it right after we record this podcast. So,
Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. You already wrote a review about it, but let's just recap what your thoughts on it.
Okay. My number one thought on it is Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark is based on the book series that it was designed to traumatize children, and I feel like that book just screamed for an anthology movie, and I feel like the movie tried to interweave its story that interconnects all of the stories that they decided to use and feature. They interweaved it too much, and so then like you're just it diluted the effect of the stories, like as opposed to like it just being the intro that is like the top level story for an anthology. Mm-hmm. Where they go and they break into the house, they find the book, and then everything else is them just reading the stories, and then it just cuts to the various short stories. And yeah, like I feel like that would have had a bigger impact,
like VHS kind of, where like they're reading the book And it's just cutting between them, and they're getting haunted by the lady at the house while that's happening. But they keep reading the book, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I definitely think this movie was not for horror fans as much as it was for fans of Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark who are horror fans.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like its main goal is to scare anybody, which is unfortunate. It almost has this nostalgia effect to it, it feels like.
I thought there was some, obviously the creature design was really good, and that was kind of, all that stuff was creepy, but...
I feel like the Pale Woman lived up to what I wanted, and I feel like the Jangly Man also did. Like, I thought those were two, the great ones, and, like, the way they did the Scarecrow was great, I agree. It definitely had good visual work done, but I just feel like I was just like, this is dragging in between each one of these because they want us to care about these characters, and I just don't.
Yeah, I feel like it was kind of like a Godzilla-y, you know, like Godzilla, the first remake one, was like too focused on people and not focused enough on Godzilla. And you're like, okay, cool, like, I don't care about these people, I want to see scary stories, like, I don't need to know the trials and tribulations of the main character's mom leaving her and her having, like, trauma. I didn't come to see that. Like, I came to see these, like, stories reimagined, and, yeah, I agree.
But, just, like, think about it, everybody, if you had seen Scary Stories and you're like, hey, I really liked those scary scenes, it's like, great. You could have had about 5 more of them if they hadn't tried to put a story on top of it.
Yeah, right. And it could, or they could have done it maybe as like a show instead of a movie, like.
Which also would have been.
Why
great.
Not? I mean, I'm not sure why some people hold to the format. You know, so many good horror shows are being made nowadays that if you think Screaming Anthology is literally a book anthology, and I mean, because there's like 7 or I think there's like 5 or 6 Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark books. At least 4. But,
yeah, it's a good chunk.
It's literally telling you that you need to do an anthology. And even if you did, like, 3 stories an episode, I mean, that's what, like, the kind of the lore thing with Aaron Mankey, that kind of stuff is all televised and it's all successful. And I don't know. It's.
Yep.
You're, like, trying to force it into a format that it never needed or wanted to go into.
I agree.
I just was, yeah, I mean, I thought it was okay. Like, it's a PG-13 horror film based on a, like, children's horror book.
Yeah, and as far as that goes, I think it did a good job. It definitely wasn't bad, and it didn't feel like a waste of time.
Would you take your kids to see it, though?
Absolutely not.
So, like, unit failed, because, I mean, I was a kid and read those books. And if I was a kid and couldn't go see that movie because my parents wouldn't let me, then why is it being made for that audience?
100% accurate.
But, you know, you would also never have kids because you're a serial killer, so what do you know?
Well, that doesn't mean I didn't have kids. I just spawned new
fair.
Serial killers.
That's fair. All right, so speaking of kids' movies, I saw The Banana Splits. For those who don't know what I'm talking about, there is a video game that's out. It's really, really terrifying, called Five Nights at Freddy's, about a Chuck E. Cheese-esque place that has animatronic robots that come alive at night, and they need to be watched by a security guard, and that's you in the video game, and you're trying to survive the night, basically. And there's lots of jump scares, and it's pretty horrifying. If you ever watch anybody play, go on YouTube and type in Five Nights at Freddy's, and you'll find about 1,000,000,000,000 videos. But the other cool part about Five Nights at Freddy's is that they did there's like 5 games, I think, and the story is crazy. And every game has like little hints and more building for all the story and stuff that's happening. And it's so deep and so mysterious that people really play it because of that. Because there's so many Easter eggs and there's so much theme and so much like thought put into it that people really love it. So that is... that thing that has a lot of love for it, they always want to translate that stuff to movies. And the Banana Splits movie feels like as far as certain people could get with Five Nights at Freddy's without having to buy the franchise, you know? So, the Banana Splits...
Like,
yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, yeah, I was just going to say, it was a nice little trick to basically make a Five Nights at Freddy's movies by using a much cheaper, outdated franchise. That nobody's touching anymore.
And are we cool with spoilers on this? Because you haven't seen it yet.
No, I'm fine.
Okay, so spoilers for Banana Splits if you haven't seen it. So the Banana Splits was an old TV show that was on. It was a Hanna-Barbera, like, basically costumed people TV show. And in this one, the Banana Splits aren't costumed people, they're animatronics, and the show's still going nowadays, and it surrounds a kid who's going there for his birthday, and some terrible update happens to one of or all of the Banana Splits, and they start, like, murdering everybody. And it, so they're, it's like right after their live show's over, the show's getting canceled, but, like, their creator has instilled in them that the show must go on, so they start killing people who are going to stop them from having the show go on, and kidnapping all the kids that are there and making them watch this horrible stuff that they're doing. It's pretty entertaining. I mean, it's kind of cheesy because you can tell it is a video demand straight. It didn't go to theaters, so it's just as much as, you know, they put as much money into it as they can. But I don't know, it was pretty fun. I think I liked it. I didn't mind spending $20 to see it on Amazon.
Was it like, did it have like kind of a Victor Crowley Hatchet kind of level of quality to it, where like you're getting enough out of the gore effects and everything, but the acting is kind of garbage, or is it even a little bit lower than that?
It's better than that. It's not as trashy as Adam Green usually is. The only movie that Adam Green did that I didn't think was really trashy in terms of like the acting or like trying to be a C or B movie was Digging Up the Marrow, because like it was different. But this movie like actually has pretty decent. It's not Academy Award winning acting, but good acting. And it's
so maybe on the level of like Clown, would that maybe be a good?
Yeah, let's say that. Let's say on Clown. Okay. And they have some pretty good gore scenes in it. Like, some pretty good ones. There's, like, a scene where this dude gets cut in half in a magic box, and then they pull the box open and his, like, organs spill out. And it's like, oh, shit. And then they have scenes where people's heads get bashed in pretty bad and people getting set on fire, and yeah. So, it's not, like, a kid's movie at all. It's a straight-up R-rated horror film, but... So it's pretty good. I thought it was a cool adventure into that, and they set it up so there could be a sequel if they wanted to. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, fun. I'm excited for it to maybe be a little bit cheaper to rent soon. Yeah. And then I'll totally check it out.
Yeah. And we can talk about Incident in a second, but because following up on that, Hoax just came out, this movie called Hoax. And I wanted to talk about it after Band of Splits because it's in the same vein of like video on demand movies. It's like how you can e-publish your own books. Like a lot of people are using the ease of like video on demand to like get movies out there, and I kind of like it because it makes it so I can see movies a lot easier, and I'm fine with that.
So I agree.
I rented a movie called Hoax that was filmed in Colorado. Like I think 4/5 of the filming locations were in Colorado, and it's about this group of campers who get murdered and a TV crew that goes out to investigate like where they got murdered because everyone thinks it's Bigfoot, and it's kind of cool. I mean, it had Ben Browder in it. If you don't know who that is, it's one of the dudes from Farscape who was in a lot of sci-fi TV shows back in the like 90s and early 2000s. He's a pretty cool actor, and he does lots of fun stuff. But it also had a few other people that I don't really recall the name of, but it wasn't terrible. A lot of the acting again was kind of like clown level acting, and it was pretty cool. There's some pretty good scenes in it. People get die, and then the end, there's a pretty big twist, followed by a subsequent, later, bigger twist, which was kind of fun.
Interesting. Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, it definitely is so there's some people in Colorado who are convinced there's a Bigfoot in Colorado, and I can't tell if it's playing on that, because there's a guy in it who's, like, this cryptozoologist who... I can't tell if he's just a really, really, really good actor or legitimately one of the people from Colorado Bigfoot that they just got to star in the movie. So,
interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it was worth a shot. Yeah, I'd say if you're interested in that kind of, like, Bigfoot-style horror movie, it's good, and it's a pretty good, like, creature feature.
Yeah, I've got to ask, though, like... what's the appeal? Like, what's the deal? Why do we have so many Bigfoot movies, like, recently. Like, we've had Exists and Willow Creek and Primal Rage.
Yeah.
And this one. And I just wonder, for whatever reason, just what essentially equates to, like, a big hairy man just doesn't appeal to me as scary. Like, I've seen all of those movies, other than the most recent one you saw.
Yeah.
I
actually haven't seen any of those movies, because usually I don't watch these kinds of things, but there's some people that we both know that have been working on Hoax, and so I decided to watch it.
Yeah. And, like, yeah, I think that's awesome. I just get confused. I get confused on that part of it. Like, where... It's not... And again, it's not that I'm not happy that they're being made. Like, it's fun. It's a monster movie. It's creature, you know. Like, I'm all for those. Mm-hmm. It's just... I'm just curious why it's always... why there's been recently been a big jump, a big leap in Bigfoot movies.
Well, I mean, if one person less makes on a some good other one, stuff, then everybody's gonna try to make it, right?
Yeah.
And true. Sometimes those you get caught up in these things where, like, people were, like, stuck in production or stuck in editing or something, ran out of money, couldn't finish, and then just weird timing happens and all these movies come out at the same time. So, but they also
that
to
does
be, like,
always tend to happen.
Like, not. None of them have released in theaters, which is interesting, right? Like, all of them have been, like, VOD or...
It's true, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, maybe I should go back and watch them, because I'm not sure how Hoax rates against other movies, but it wasn't too bad. It was kind of a cool mix between, like, science and cryptozoology and, like, I don't know, some other movies that if I said would give it away, give the twist away, so I won't say anything else.
I would definitely recommend, of the ones that I listed off, Primal Rage would be more in line, I think, with what Hoax was, mm-hmm. And was another kind of somewhat low quality, but decent practical effects work. Primal Rage. I would give that one a shot.
Okay. Let's talk about Incident at Ghostlands, but I do want to mention something in between here. I don't know if I said this on a previous episode or not, but I did finally finish Apostle.
Oh, yes.
It was awesome. But I...
It's such a great cult movie.
Yeah. We don't have to get into the cult thing right now. I think that that was definitely more of a cult to me. And the one thing I'll say about that, so we don't have to spend a whole other episode on it, was the people that are, and I'm air quote worshipping, that god... are way more, like, socially manipulative than the people in Midsommar. And I think that's where I differentiate what a cult is. Because, like the people in Apostle, I don't think all of them believe that this god is there, and that's why they're doing what they're doing. Like, I think definitely a few of them do, including the main leader guy, right? But some of the other ones, you're like, these guys are just power creepers, right? And that is, like, what cult resonates to me. It's, like, people who just want power, and they use whatever means they can to get it. And maybe that's more of, like, a too real version of a cult, like, all the cults that we see in those crazy United States, and, like, all the... Yeah. But anyway, that's my differentiator. We don't have to keep talking about it. I'll stop.
Oh, no, it's fine. I can see what you're... where you're coming from with those differentiators, yeah. And, like, when you're watching Apostle, it feels more like a real, like, cults that you would see in modern times, like, where it's almost this kind of, like, totalitarian environment.
Yeah.
That's slightly disguised, that tries to disguise itself as some kind of pure thing, but it doesn't, mm-hmm. It's not.
And I will say that I think they're, if we both consider them cult or folk horror films, I think that they're on opposite ends, because... one of them is very subtle, and nothing really happens in, which is Midsommar. And as far as, like you have people who believe in a religion, and then delivery on that religious belief. Apostle has, like, the people that believe in the religion, and they're super culty, and you can feel it, but also the sci-fi delivery of, like, what they're believing in. And I think that was what Midsommar was missing for me, was, like, a little bit more of the like, religious belief delivery, you know? Like,
yeah, that's
an
fair.
Earth elemental coming out of the ground and killing a bunch of people because they're worshipping the Earth. Like, that could be fun, but, you know, it didn't do that. So, I will say I did like Apostle more than Midsommar, and I think Apostle, if I would have watched it last year, would have definitely been in my top 10.
Yeah. Oh, so. I'm glad to hear that. I love that movie. I thought it was great.
So let's chat about...
It took a few different angles.
Yeah, definitely. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. But yeah, if you haven't seen Apostle yet, go see Apostle. It's on Netflix. It's amazing.
Yep. So Incident in a Ghostland
is... very Lovecraftian, which moves us into our next Ghostland thing.
Yeah.
Apostle is very Lovecraftian.
So Incident in a Ghostland, it kind of leads you down a different path. But it's on Shudder right now. And when it starts out with a quote from... Oh, by the way, we're going to do spoilers on this one. So just a heads up. It opens up with like a quote from somebody that is basically saying how awesome H.P. Lovecraft is. And then it goes into the movie and you know, if you're a fan of Lovecraft, you get really psyched. You're like, oh, that sounds awesome. I'm so excited. I didn't pick up on any Lovecraft on it. The main reason I could tell that it was brought up was because the main character is an aspiring writer that wants to be like Lovecraft. And it's all about her, about that aspiration to do that. So the movie takes place with, or the movie opens with like a scene basically with the mom and her two daughters getting attacked by these two sadistic, messed up people. And it like cuts to one of the daughters, the one that's an aspiring writer in the future, and she's like succeeded and like, you know, she's, you know, done great with her life.
Is
and everybody loves her books.
Vera or Beth?
Beth.
Okay.
Vera is like got like attacked. Like, thankfully, the movie never, just with how brutal the content is, I'm thankful that like 96% of it does not happen on screen.
That's fair.
And I'm okay with what they decided to show and what they didn't. Like, I don't need friggin' a Serbian film. Like, I don't need to watch that stuff. So, it like cuts to her in the future, and you know she's got this great life, and then like, you know, her sister's like screaming, like calls her on the phone and starts screaming, and so she like goes back to the house, which apparently her mom and sister are still living there.
Their mom's terrible. Still alive.
Yes. Okay. So, well, she's not. So she goes back to the house, and like it ends up that, you know, after a series of events and whatnot, Beth wakes up, and she's still in the basement of the old house, and she's young. And her sister Vera tells her like, you've been like, you've just snapped, like you left me here mentally, and I've just been here by myself, and you like created this own world for yourself in your head and left me here. And like, she had like apparently like dolls and pictures up that like represented her own child and husband, and she was like talking to them but wouldn't talk to Vera. And so it was this whole thing of like, you know, this coping mechanism. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And so like it's like a coping mechanism. So like what they do is they lock them in the basement of their own old house. And the mom was murdered by these people.
Okay.
And they leave and come back and, you know, torture them and do terrible things. And so they, like, when she comes back, she ends up, you know, not, you know, she's been gone mentally. She's been checked out.
But she's still a kid.
So, like, it's, yes. So it's like she doesn't, like, when she comes back into it, she's not mentally adjusted for it. So her response is to fight back. So she fights back, and they end up getting out, and then they get caught again, and she starts to check out again. So she goes back into the future. She sees H.P. Lovecraft, and he like just, you know, is telling her how amazing her books are. But then she hears her sister screaming in the background, and she's just like, I can't stay here. I can't use this coping mechanism. I need to go save my sister. So she gets out again. And then she just goes crazy primal on these people and just starts like biting their necks, and like she just goes nuts on them. And it's good. It was a good movie. It was really well done. The story is really interesting. The just disgusting brutality of the people is hard, but it's definitely what I would say takes it from psychological thriller to psychological horror. Like, don't see this movie going like, oh, what an interesting, like, psychological, you know, twisty movie. Yeah, but it will mess with you.
Okay.
With how far it takes stuff. So, like, I mean, just in concept. Like, mostly in concept, but, like, there's just so much of it, and it's so, the movie is so centered around these, what happens to these poor girls, is, it's rough, but it does do some very interesting things on, like, you know, coping, you know, psychological, thresholds, for children, and, like, what everybody's able to, like, survive, like, what people will do to survive, like, on a psychological level, and how to process things.
Mm-hmm.
It is an interesting movie.
I thought for a second that Ghostlands, or something about Ghostlands, had something to do with the Lovecraft story, but I can't find a reference to it. Maybe I'm just losing my mind, but maybe that's part of it, is, like, because a lot of, like, Lovecraft stuff, we always want to have, like, tentacles and crazy monsters, but Lovecraft isn't really also about psychological terror and never being able to cope with things, and, like, the immutable, like, scream of oblivion and all that stuff, you know, like you're human, you can't do anything, you're just a human, and everything is already fated, and you're destined to fail, and maybe that's something with, like, the Lovecraft, but I'm sure there's some really deep shit in this movie that I need to see it, but it sounds really good, actually, now that you've talked about it. I kind of do want to watch it. I wish you wouldn't have spoiled it.
Oh, I'm just kidding. Oh man, so sorry.
But that sounds pretty good, actually.
Yeah. Oh, and I guess the main reason that I had spoiled it was that I wanted to compliment the fact that, like, that twist doesn't happen in the last 5 minutes. Like, it happens about halfway through.
Mm-hmm.
So you understand the situation of just, like, Okay. She developed this coping mechanism. So when she goes back into it later, you're like, okay, she's got to find a way out of her own coping mechanism. And it's about getting out of that and getting into reality than it is about, like, oh, this was all fake the whole time and nothing was real. Like, so it's able to give you that, I think, a good balance of reality and her fantasy.
Interesting. Okay. Well. Yeah. Yeah. It sounds pretty good. Yeah. All right, well, that's all we have for the normal episode, so if you are cool and you only want to listen for 30 minutes, then we're done, but we're also going to talk about trilogies now. Since we've had 33 episodes, 33, 30, whatever, we're going to talk about trilogies, because 3 is a number, and they're both part of that trilogy thing, so 3. But really what we're going to talk about probably for as long as we want, I don't know how long it's going to be, is the good, the bad, and the weird when it comes to trilogies. Like, what is a good trilogy, what's a bad trilogy, which types of things are trilogies or aren't trilogies that could be considered trilogies or started off as trilogies that turned into something more. But we're just going to talk about stuff. And this originally was slightly in honor of our 30th/33rd episode, but also because Annabelle Creation came out. And so, you know, let's get into it.
Yeah. My first big question, because I just got to get this out of the way, is, has there ever been a pre-planned horror trilogy?
That's something I'm trying to look at through right now. I'm thinking maybe, and I guess if we venture out into shows as well and consider seasons part of a story and stories a trilogy, you might be able to say the Stranger Things. Maybe. Because...
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough to...
I'm thinking, like, Evil Dead's definitely not a trilogy. Because they weren't even going to make two movies, like, but they did. Maybe Paranormal Activity, depending on how far they wrote ahead of time, because the Paranormal Activity story stuff is pretty coherent, but for me, Paranormal Activity is one of the weird ones, because there was 3, and then they just kept going, and they're like, hey, we can still make money off of this. So...
Yeah.
For me,
the closest one was Unbreakable, Split, and Glass.
I didn't even have that on my list, but that's a good point.
Because, like, I think that the only reason I say it's the closest is because when they made Split, they planned Glass, and it was going to complete the trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't believe that they had that he had any intention on making a sequel to Unbreakable.
I'd say when
Unbreakable came out,
maybe the Blood and Ice Cream trilogy from Nick Frost and Simon Pegg, because it was always planned as a trilogy, and Shaun of the Dead, you know, World's End, and Hot Fuzz. I don't know that they're all horror, but, I mean, it really depends. I think there's enough, like, in Hot Fuzz to make it kind of Clandestine, which could be horror if you think about it too much, but that's the only one I have on my list I could even think would come close. That was a series of movies that was planned as a trilogy.
And it's so interesting because you'd think that, you know, that like at some point that would have happened by now, I feel like, where somebody would have had the forethought of being like, you know what, I'm going to make a series, a three film set of horror movies that have this progression, and nobody's done it. And I think that part of that is related to very few, if any, studio would
green be willing to donate to
yes, that they're going to throw that kind of money at a horror movie and a horror movie franchise. It just doesn't happen. And so like that, so the chances of it happening are probably very, very slim. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's probably at the top of the list of reasons why. But it's because horror movies are all about like the organic growth.
Yeah.
Like, is this working? Great. We'll make 25 of them and have 85 spinoffs like The Conjuring. Like, great.
Insidious.
Not something that works. Let's do it. Yeah.
So like,
Insidious. Yeah. I mean, like, same thing.
If Insidious was a trilogy, that would be crazy because the amount of storytelling they have in those movies and like connecting things together is pretty high when it comes to the plot of a horror movie. Meaning like the callbacks and the Easter eggs and the stuff that they throw in to like show you that they had the forethought is all pretty good. So like I could see maybe Insidious doing that but like again, it just comes down to the idea that I doubt any studio would greenlight a trilogy, you know? You never know if you're gonna make money.
I put that one down as like because I think eventually you have to get to the point where you're basically saying because a lot of the successful horror franchises, they don't stop at three.
Mm-mm.
So if it only got three films, it's because it wasn't very good.
Yeah,
like it's not a very good horror franchise. So like
to like look Blair at Witch the Project, good horror... but I like Blair Witch Project, so I have it on my good list. But
like to have good, so like to have a good horror trilogy, you really just have to pull the you know, a chunk of three movies from a horror franchise, a successful horror franchise. And I did that for Insidious. Like I feel like the first three represented a really power, like, because I put them down as like one of the better horror trilogies out there because of what you said. It's got this cohesive story that actually has like progression, as opposed to like a lot of other horror franchises where the first three, or you know, the series of movies, it's basically a soft reset.
Yeah,
it's like Michael Myers killing people, and then they try to stop him at the end, and sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. Reset that. He, you know, shows up, starts killing people. Same thing with Jason. Mm-hmm. Same thing with Freddy. Like it's got a soft reset, whereas Insidious is like trying to actually progress a real story.
Yeah.
Through its
so
movies.
So if you're talking about progressing a story being part of a trilogy, like I don't know that there's very many like true trilogies, but I know that there's movies that are paired in threes that have done it well. So I'm actually going to call out Annabelle currently, because currently there's only three Annabelle movies and they do progress a single story. So if we have to choose one at this exact moment, I'd say that Annabelle is probably the most cohesive trilogy movie that's a true trilogy at the moment. But they're already talking about making another Annabelle, so I don't know if it counts.
But yeah, I mean, like it's hard to, again, like it's hard to find like
Blade?
A true trilogy. But yes, but they're not good.
Sure.
The first one is good. The second one, I personally love the second one, but the third one is
Alien is the other one I have, because technically
yes.
Covenant and the other one I can't remember, Prometheus.
Well, there's
really...
Prometheus, Covenant, but don't forget Resurrection.
I don't really consider that part of the Alien trilogy, though. Like, because
I don't either. But I just think don't forget about.
You're right.
I literally
forget about it. So that's another one. I actually do like the Blair Witch Project a lot, because there's exactly three movies. The second one, it follows the theme for what we're going to talk about next, which is good, bad, good. But I actually thought the second one wasn't that bad. Do you also have Jeepers Creepers, which is a solid trilogy? That is three, and it's...
I hated the third one.
I thought
that was hot garbage.
That one was, like, the next one I'm going to say, which is Feast. Feast and Jeepers Creepers were, like, they started off on such a high note, and the last version of the movie makes you wish that you didn't watch movies, almost. You're just like, this is what I could run into if I ever blindly watch a movie? Holy hell, like, I never want to watch anything like this ever again. So, but the one thing I think... slightly, well, no, so that's not part of it. I won't talk about that yet, but there are a lot of those kinds of trilogies that we saw, like we talked about Nightmare on Elm Street. I have Nightmare on Elm Street as part of my weird category, because Nightmare on Elm Street is very similar to Halloween and the Jason movies, which I put Nightmare on Elm Street's my favorite, so that's why I put it in as the main one, because I'm not a huge fan of the other ones, but like, it had a good first, like an iconic first one, and the second one was like basically shit, and it's really interesting if you look at it from a lot of angles that aren't it as a horror movie with Jason or with Freddy Krueger. Like, lots of, like, the second movie for Nightmare on Elm Street had, like, amazing inclinations and, like, allusions to, like, homosexuality, and there's a lot of interesting things that you can go into there about, like, what's happening with these characters and how they're growing, and but you never watch it for that. Like, you have to have, like, a film degree to get the stuff that they're talking about. And so, then the third one comes back to start, like, a new trilogy, almost, which is the Dream Warriors stuff, right?
Which is the best one ever.
So, like, you
that
have...
That is my absolute favorite.
So you have the Dream Warriors, and then you have the next one, which has the remnants of the Dream Warriors or whatever. And, I don't know. It at that point, it kind of goes off the rails, because you're like, well, was the first three of the trilogy, or the Dream Warriors stuff the trilogy, or, like, do we consider the first one and then A New Nightmare and then like Freddy vs. Jason the trilogy? It's like, where do we go? Because or maybe you do the first one, Dream Warriors, and the New Nightmare as a trilogy because they all have the same main character in it. It's too hard to categorize as a trilogy, but it follows that if you look at the first three movies, it follows a pattern for good, really, really weird or bad, and then really like significantly better than the second, third movie.
Yeah, and like the Nightmare on Elm Street one in particular, the first one's iconic, the third one's my favorite in the franchise by far, mm-hmm. and the second one, despite some respectable like analogies and symbolism it was trying to have, it felt like to me something that you would do in a remake 20 years after the movie was made, or after the first one was made, or like something that you would do when you ran out of ideas. Like, it's such a weird first sequel to Nightmare on Elm Street. It was, like, so out of bounds. It's like Jason Goes to Hell.
Yep.
Like, but that one is, like, in the proper place. That one's, like, 7 or 8 in, or however long it is. Like, it's when they ran out of ideas, what did we do with Jason? And then they made garbage, but they tried to do something different. That was the way the second Nightmare on Elm Street felt to me. I'm like, why did
or
you
like
do this
Halloween
so early
stuff
on?
Or Halloween, actually, Michael Myers was born as part demon or blah, blah, blah. It doesn't... You're just like, okay, stop. Like, let's just reboot it or something. So, two bad ones I have are Hostel and Human Centipede. Terrible trilogies. You should probably never watch them. You can just basically categorize them as crap. Don't ever think about it. But there's another...
Where the first one had something it was trying to do, mm-hmm. and that was it. That should have been the end of it.
And so you had Exorcism here. It was the same as Nightmare on Elm Street, so terrible sequel, better third film. I haven't really seen any Exorcism movies, so I'm going to take your word for it.
Yeah, the third one has, like, slowly grown, like, a group of, like, respectability around it, but it's just, like, way better than the second one. Where the second one was just like cash cow, like, or cash grab, like, let's just try to get as much as we can from the first one, while it's still running. And then the third one was like, okay, wait, crap, we have to actually try.
Another one that kind of falls into the category of like good, bad, good, or good, not as good, good, is Scream. I didn't hate the second Scream movie, but a lot of people didn't like it as much as the third, because the third is where you start to get really meta back into the things that started it and all that stuff. So Scream is another one of those. But then Scream 4 came out, so it kind of falls into the weird category, because like it was like the first three, and then Resurrection for Alien was Scream as the first three, and then you have like Scream 4, and it's like technically related, but it's way in the future, so is it its own start for the trilogy? I don't know. It gets a little crazy, right?
Yeah.
So one of the things... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no.
I was
going to
talk about Evil Dead right now. So.
Oh, go for
but
it.
But I want to preface this with, there's another trend, which I think is, and this isn't necessarily Evil Dead, but I will say I like the second Evil Dead more than the third, because I think it's more iconic to me. VHS is one of my favorite series of movies in the horror genre. VHS 1 was getting its stride, has some pretty cool stuff, and they even came out with a movie for the Siren short that was in it, that was a full-length film. The second one is really where it hits its stride, in my opinion, because the connecting story is really good, and the shorts are some of the best shorts that you get. And the third one had a really, really shitty connecting story, but some pretty good shorts. And so Evil Dead follows a similar thing for me, where like the first one was either not supposed to be made, was weird, or was getting its stride. The second one is the best one, and the third one is like remnants of the second one without being the second one, good enough to be the second one, you know?
So you found one that was actually kind of reversed.
Yeah, it was, yeah, like the second film, like it's like Empire, right? Like, or how some people view Star Wars, it's like Star Wars New Hope, Empire Strikes Back is the best one, Return of the Jedi is like worse. And whether it's worse than A New Hope or just worse than Return of the or Empire Strikes Back, it's up to the person who's watching to decide, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
Tremors is the same way, I think.
Oh, man. Tremors. I love the first one, though.
Me too. I think the second one, though, is where you get into, like, the... It starts to get differentiated enough and self-aware enough that it's really entertaining.
Yes. But I loved the first two.
But the first one's iconic, right? Like, Tremors is Tremors. It's like Nightmare on Elm Street. It's Tremors.
I just, like, every time I watch it, I'm just like, this feels... Like, even knowing everything... And, like, you know, you catch some of the little issues with the practical effects and everything, I guess. But, like, still going back and watching the first one, I'm like, they did such a good job of making you think that there are giant worms underground. It's so good at doing that.
There are giant worms underground. Are you saying that you mean, like, in the visual effects they made it look really good?
What? Yes. Okay. Yeah.
I thought you meant, like the whole movie is like a hoax, and it's like not really worms. And I was like, wait, did I see? Are we talking about the right movie?
No. I mean, like most of that work is just like really well done, like visual effects. I think they had very few like life-size stuff. Mm-hmm. A lot of that is like miniature work, and you cannot tell.
Yeah.
Years later, you cannot tell. You can go back and watch it, and you're like, so much of this looks so stinking real. Mm-hmm. They did such a good job. I don't know. I love that movie. I know it's campy, but I don't care. I love it.
All right. I think the last ones I have to talk about are Hatchet, which was similar to Scream in terms of it had a trilogy, and then a fourth one came out. Hatchet movies are, like, way less entertaining, I think. Well, not as good as Scream, in my opinion, but they're still worth mentioning here. Similarly with Paranormal Activity, I think Paranormal Activity's trilogy was really comparable to Insidious as far as story goes, but I don't think it held up as it kept going. But there was a lot of cool stuff you get from Paranormal Activity about how the parents are actually, like, they actually caused the kids to be haunted because they were, like, selling their souls and blah, 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 which is kind of fun.
Yeah. My last three thoughts on them are, or on trilogies would be, I think that Evil Dead's worth mentioning just because it's such a wacky trilogy. Mm-hmm. Because the second one almost feels like a remake of the first one.
Yeah.
And then the third one is completely off the rails of what the first two are. And so I just wanted to bring that up. And then
they have the weird fourth remake, and you're like, it's technically a remake, but if you talk to Raimi and the other people involved, it actually could be happening in the same universe, because not all the Evil Dead stuff centers around Ash. So it's like, there's an argument whether or not the fourth Evil Dead is actually a remake or just something set in the same universe in the future or something like that.
Which makes it even crazier and more, like, you know, genre-spanning-ish. Just by having it, because that's like the pure, to me, the fourth one is the purest of the,
me too,
purest horror of the me four. Too. So I concluded that I was trying to find the best horror trilogies objectively as I could, based on my own subjectivity, but like the ones that I feel like had the least decline over the three originals. And I think the number one is Alien. Mm-hmm. I do not hate... I mean, Aliens is considered by many to be even better than Alien. I think that they're too different to say that one is better than the other, because they're both trying to accomplish two different things. I think they're both just, like, you know, in the top 50 movies of all time, in my opinion, yeah, on anybody's list. And then Alien 3, I think, is derided and panned by too many people. I don't think it was as bad. It had its flaws, and, you know, you can tell in the state of the movie as it ends up that there were some production issues as things went along, but I don't think it was near as bad as everybody says it is. I think it's still an amazing movie, and I think it's about as good as you can ever get from a horror trilogy. And then the other one I wanted to mention was Hellraiser. I think that there's a decline. There's a gradual decline from the first one to the third one. Mm-hmm. But it's not this, like, cliff dive that most have.
Yeah.
Where at least one of them is terrible and then the other two are good. Yeah. Like, this one's like, the third one's not great, but the second one is really, really good, and the first one's amazing. Yeah. So
I think if you asked me to do it, I would say VHS is probably my top three, because there's exactly three. They've never made a fourth, and I think that it flows really well. The fourth one has a really weird story, but it doesn't really matter in the end, because you're really watching it for the shorts, and the shorts are good throughout the whole thing. And maybe we don't consider that a trilogy because it's a bunch of short films, but I'm considering it a trilogy because there's three movies. Alien is my second. I think that even if the three isn't as good as the second, it still completes a story arc, even if it's not the original story arc they wanted to tell. And then fourth for me is probably Insidious, because I think that that story in the first three Insidious is like really solid. And I really think that that was iconic for what it was doing for the time. Like, it started off with something and it finished it. And then there was a fourth movie and I don't really, never saw it. I don't see how it comes. But yeah, those are my three. But I think we have to cut it off right now, unless you want to talk about something else. We can have another episode about this if we want, but we're at an end here. If you'd like, what did you think about trilogies? Do you guys like trilogies? Was it good, bad? What are your favorite trilogies? Were any of the things that we said stupid? Or do you not agree with them?
Can you think of a pre-planned trilogy? I bet you can.
Yeah. Yeah, answer
you
that.
Can try it. I looked everywhere. I've tried to find one.
So, thanks for listening. Like, comment, subscribe, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.